Welcome to the Botcast Podcast. My name is Don.
My name is Scott.
And we are...
Podcast. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to fade the music out.
Oh, so I see what you're doing there. Because
let's see if that works.
When I say see, I don't see nor hear. Well, I guess I see you turning knobs, but I don't hear what you're talking about.
We'll see if I remember to bring it back in at the end.
Okay.
If it doesn't work, we will never do it this way again.
Oh, okay.
Or I'll practice with it. I've had tech issues this. I don't want to get any spoilers here, but I almost put a tent peg through my iPad in frustration last night.
So. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's almost a little bit too early to do a segue into there. I mean, we have not annoyed our...
Oh, no. Definitely too early for that segue.
Right. I mean, we have not annoyed our listeners with 10 minutes of banter and whatever.
Well, I'll just say, I take notes on an iPad because I use that Apple Pencil, and on any PDF, you can take notes. I load most of my PDFs into whatever it's called now, iBooks, just for the searching and indexing. And I think if I have this right, they don't count against your iCloud storage, whatever. I have one of the commentaries. Well, yeah, two of the commentaries I use loaded in there. One of them I don't use a lot. The one is more like almost like a Bible study more than a commentary. And so I closed the PDF and opened the commentary, read through it, closed the commentary, brought the PDF back up. I'd done that like 1,000 times before. It's dumb that you can't open two books at the same time, but I'm like, whatever. It's, you know, it stores them and it's fine. It corrupted the PDF. All my notes.
What?
I have no notes from any prior podcast.
Nuh-uh.
I had to rewrite as much as I could for chapter 4. This is why we're going to do chapter 4 today. Yeah. This is why I can't really do chapter 5 tonight, because I had to stop near the end of 4 and go back and redo it. And I kind of ran out of time.
Gosh.
So it was, yeah. So I'm looking online. Apparently, this is common. So now I do not store my PDF, at least this one, my scripture. I use the ESV digital scriptural. The ESV Digital Scripture Journal from Crossway to keep notes, and I will never ever put that in iBooks again.
Wow.
I will keep the PDF.
Can you save the PDF before you put it into iBooks?
So when you work in iBooks, the PDF would save automatically whatever notes you put over it.
Okay.
Because it just uses the Apple markup.
Right.
Now, the way that it does it, it counts against my iCloud storage, which I'm not close to using up all of it, but I'm just that guy that doesn't let his phone get full, who doesn't let his iPad get full, doesn't let his online storage get full. Now it automatically syncs between any Apple device through iCloud.
Mm-hmm.
So the same notes appear on my Mac Mini. That's my home computer.
Okay.
My iPhone, my iPad, and any other iOS devices I would have now or in the future.
Yeah.
So hopefully that means it's fine and it'll autosave every time it hits the internet.
Okay.
So yeah, but it corrupted it. Here, actually, I could probably show you. It actually won't even, I set the microphone because that's what you gotta do. So this is it right here. Mm-hmm. ESV Bible, it says landscape.
Yeah.
Cannot open document, unable to open, and then it gives me the name with a bunch of gibberish.
And you can't like take it out and it's already fully corrupted then.
Yeah. Well, so I went on to iCloud and looked up the book in there and it same thing. Then I downloaded the book onto my Mac Mini and it does the same thing.
Oh.
So.
Yep.
Hooray.
Yeah. You used all these things. I this and I that, and I don't know I anything because I don't own an I, but
It's like this. Basically, iBooks is a Kindle store.
Okay.
But it's owned by Apple and it's crappier.
Okay.
Like Kindle by far has more stuff.
Okay.
Like if I buy a ebook, I'm probably buying it from Kindle, or I'm getting it from that Crossway New Year's sale where it's $3.
Got it. Okay.
Like, sorry, I didn't mean to. Oh, that's your chair. I didn't kick you at all. No. Nope. All right. I don't know if I've ever bought a book through. I don't think I ever bought a book through iBooks. I just store them on there.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's a native app, so just let it open with iBooks. Yeah. You know, but not anymore. Never again.
Okay. See, I'm Android and Google, and I know Google probably owns my life and, you know, sells everything, and the world knows when I pick my nose and that sort of thing. But
we do.
Yep.
we watch. No, it's just... I mean, Google owns its fair share of my stuff as well. I mean, my Gmail account's from who knows how long. And I had an Android for the first, 4 or 5 years of smartphone ownership.
See, you just bought, I don't know, you just never had anything. You seem to always have problems with those phones, like the Nexuses, didn't you? Like, I was like, I never had any issues with them. Yeah,
I'll never trust an LG phone. LG phones, iBooks. Two things I'll never trust again.
Well, when Nexus was done by Motorola.
That's the one I didn't get.
Right. Those were the good ones. And then when LG took it over, they went to...
No, the 4 was LG, the 5 was LG, and then they had like this 5-something number.
Yeah. They had a 6.
And then they had a 6-something number. The 6-something number was the Motorola one. Mm-hmm. It was like a 6X or a 6... SE or something, you know, it was like, you know, one of those. And that's the one I didn't get. I got the 5 whatever.
Okay.
And that was my mistake. The 5 was a great piece of phone. The software was just crap.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't I think it was like the interface between LG and Android that was crap on that.
Okay. Yeah, because we've got Pixels. We own Pixels in this house.
Yeah.
And then my kids have Motorolas. Because Motorola Androids are fine. I won't buy anything else Android. I mean, just those two companies. I won't even do Samsung. Like, they put too much extra additional junk on it, and I don't want to mess with it.
Well, I'm at a point now where my life is so, even my work stuff is Apple. Like, I'm until, like, you know, unless my work decides and says, hey, we're going to go all PC for everybody. Well, we just hired a guy, and, he asked for a PC, and my boss was like, oh, no, we don't get Apples now.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, we don't give a choice? I had a choice.
Wow.
But, you know, I guess I made the right choice.
Okay.
For him.
Yeah, we have one Apple product in the house. Nope, that's a lie. Sarah has...
yeah, so your wife has a...
An iPad.
She's got a Pro, right?
She's an older one. It's an
Oh, the older Pro. Yeah. Okay.
And then she just got an iMac. But that's because she's
a MacBook.
Yeah. See, that's how much I don't know. And she got that for work, being her home business.
She chose wisely.
Yeah.
No. So I work for software development. So, like, you know, the stuff I use doesn't matter. I think you clicked. I thought, I was like, no, no more tech. No, you're fine.
Okay.
We're good. I thought more tech died. No, stop it. So, yeah, all that to say, I almost put a tent peg through my iPad.
All right. So, with talking about tent pegs, I hear that freedom
We read over this in Sunday school years ago, and I put on my Facebook back when I was like more active on there.
Mm-hmm.
I put, hey parents, if your kids come home talking about putting a tent peg through somebody's head, that was me. I'm sorry. Like, I remember putting that out there on Facebook.
See, you should have said, if your kids come home and talk about putting a tent peg through an eye or through a forehead, you probably should blame that on God.
He was the one who put the victory into the No, that's a spoiler. That's a big spoiler.
So with that...
that's a big spoiler.
So I guess we'll go ahead and read through Judges chapter 4. Chapter 5 also goes with chapter 4, but we probably will not make it to that because it's a song.
And I don't have the notes right now.
Yeah, he had... See, the thing is by an Android. Why?
Android doesn't have this capability.
It doesn't have a pen capability?
I mean, if they do, it's not as good as this one.
Buy an Android.
I considered selling it all for a computer and typing my notes, so
ooh.
I was that mad.
Wow. An Apple computer or an Android
computer? Definitely an Apple computer.
Or Google. Okay.
Yeah. Microsoft. Well, that's the other part. We mix this. We do all of our music for this in Logic, which is Apple only. I have a Logic license, not a Ableton or whatever.
All right. So I guess I can't say that we don't support Apple here at Baca.
We support it all, except for we have no Is yours Windows?
It's Windows.
Oh, see, we support it all.
No, I will not buy a Chromebook.
Oh, good.
No, I'm very against those.
Yeah, I know.
But that's beside the point.
No desire to ever use one.
Sorry, Chromebook users.
change.
yes, at least go a PC. At the very least. All right. So with that, we're going to talk about, Judges chapter 4. And because Don and I spent lots of time prior to recording, how far do you want me to read?
Oh, you probably do 1 through 4 to start.
Okay, that's what I was kind of thinking.
That's a good separator.
Or 5, maybe? I say under...
actually, 4. 1 through 3. And then we can just let all of the prophetess hit us at once.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so... And the people of Israel, again, did what was evil in the sight of the Lord after Ehud died. And the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. The commander of his army was Sisera, who lived in Haroseth-Hagoyim. Then the people of Israel cried out to the Lord. I can. Then the people of Israel cried out to the Lord for help, for he had 900 chariots of iron and oppressed the people of Israel cruelly for 20 years.
Seems like a nice guy.
Yeah. Well, 900 chariots of iron, that scared me.
Do you think it's really 900 chariots?
You know, 2 chariots of iron would scare me, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, they were. The main point is they're technologically superior.
Yeah,
would be a good way to put it.
Yeah, because I don't necessarily know if they counted, but they might have. I mean, that might have been something they bragged about.
So I saw that this technically could translate as 9 units of hundreds of chariots.
How many? What is it again?
9 units of hundreds of chariots is actually a way that could translate.
Okay.
However, people disagree.
Okay.
One of the commentators that I use, Boda, I sure hope I'm saying that right, because that's just the most cool last name ever, says it could refer to the military unit, or it could be a, quote, epic exaggeration.
Okay.
Hey, parents, this is a... we already made jokes about tent pegs through temples. This is another one. If you have kids in the car, you might want to listen to it first. If you've been fine with the content of Judges so far, this is not the worst we've talked about, but it's still something you might want to consider for the graphic nature and violent descriptions. Mm-hmm. All right, back to those 9 units of hundreds of chariots.
Or you can go ahead and get the children's... Judges Bible. That is the
illustrated.
What is the?
Is the action Bible?
Oh, they do.
That actually does have this story in it.
Oh, yeah. It does. Yeah. Ooh, I want to go read that one.
You have it, right?
I don't know if we do. I think we do.
We have 2 copies. I could probably snag one.
I think Naomi. Well, at least you should bring it so we can refer to it during a podcast just for.
I'll have to remember that.
Our entertainment.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, sorry. Back to 900 chariots.
Yeah. It's a lie. It was a technological superiority that they saw. But kind of backing up, unless you had more you wanted to say.
No, I was going to go backwards also. So
okay.
Go backwards.
How about you first?
Well, I didn't have too much to say other than we're back into the same cycle of sin. We're going to see this. So far, we've already seen it played out a couple times within Judges. We're going to see it played out lots more times in Judges. And if you read the Old Testament at all, you're going to see it played out through your prophets, through all of these situations where once again, it's that same old cycle of sin, that same old cycle of they kind of get them in a place where they're disobedient. God ends up judging them or disciplining them. They then repent. Well, it's debatable as to whether people say they repented in Judges or just asked God for help. Either way, God came back to rescue them.
Seems to depend on the
chapter. Yeah. Either way, God comes back to rescue them. And, yep.
All right. So, verse 2, did you get anything about Yabin or Yabin or Jabin?
I did not. I did not.
So, most likely, this is referring to a monarchy.
Okay.
And Joshua actually also faced a Yabin, Jabin, Jabin.
Who did?
Joshua.
Oh, okay.
And they also fought over Hazor. What this shows that the people of Israel could not hold the city. They were kind of delinquent in the, like, steadfastness. What's the word I'm thinking? When you keep doing it and you keep, not perseverance, but I guess perseverance. Like they didn't hold that. They weren't able to hold it.
Right.
And not only did they lose it, they lost it to like the same guy again. Mm-hmm. Okay. Kind of thing. So.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to think of that word, and really my daughter is getting batteries. And
is that
so
what
I'm
is?
Very distracted.
I thought she was bringing some food over. Up a package of.
Say hi, Naomi.
I don't know. Wait. Let me see if that picked that up.
Oh, okay.
Hold on. Wait, Naomi. Wait, don't say anything. Don't. Okay, go for it. Hi. Yes, there might be a little. Okay. There might be a little. Hi. On there.
Okay. And she waved. Not that anyone can see that, but
theater
she did wave.
Theater of the mind. Imagine. Yes.
So imagine.
A little girl waving.
Right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It seems not fair to call her a little because I think she's about the height of Abby.
Okay. So yeah.
My poor little daughter's. She's 5'1¼".
Oh, wow.
According to the doctor.
I don't know what Naomi
is. She only grew like a half inch in the last year. She's like distraught.
Well, Naomi, she's one of the smallest in her class. She's not the smallest. And then there's Hadessa, who she's normal size, but she is almost as tall as me, and she rubs that in often, and I tell her she's grounded. So
You got to think of my two giant young men.
Oh,
my,
no.
My 6-foot tall boy, my 5'11" boy.
Yep. They are quite tall.
Yeah. And then my 5-foot-1 girl.
Mm-hmm. that's got to be extra.
Yeah.
See, that's not fair. She just feels extra small there.
And no, she's probably not going to grow anymore.
Ooh, that's even worse.
13, bro.
Oh, is that when they stop growing?
Well, I mean, that's about, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, depending, but yeah.
So I might stay taller than Hadessa.
Yeah.
This is a win.
Barely. So they could not hold on to, they could not persevere and hold on to the city. And now there is this incredible technologically advanced army with hundreds of chariots.
Okay.
Which 900 is technically hundreds.
Yeah. And when you think about it just in general, people exaggerate, and that is because they don't necessarily know, but they're trying to communicate like something is much larger than, it's probably uncountable. Like it's probably not one of those things that they ever had the opportunity to sit there and go, ooh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right. 6. Who does that? And now I think they obviously keep better records, but once again, how are they going to know those records or whatever? So,
and we'll hear later about 10,000 men that are going to be going into battle. And once again, it's like, was that the number of men or was that a military unit? Was there tens of thousands? Was there 1,000 units of the, it's like,
right. And does it change the accuracy of the story? Does it change the intent that the author is trying to communicate? Nah. No, it's
just saying there's a larger group of people or chariots and once again, this is designed to show you that there was a military superiority from one group over another.
Yeah. And we're going to see a lot of that in Judges.
Right.
Just kind of as we go through.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. That's all I got.
Yep. Same.
All right. So we are going now through.
We're going to get introduced to Deborah. This is an interesting one because I've got a little bit on her and a lot on her conversation with Barak. So do we want to introduce her and then go on to Barack after that? Like do four and five, talk a little bit about her and then move on to the rest of it?
Yeah, we can do that. Well, yeah, and then we'll stop at 10 because that's a natural break.
Yeah.
As we kind of go back in time. All right. Chapter four, four through five.
Just four and five, yeah.
Now, Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lappidoth, was judging Israel at the time. She used to sit under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. And the people of Israel came up to her for judgment.
Yeah. She seems nice.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of interesting. The way that she's spelled out is the same way that they would have introduced a male prophet. However, typically the lineage and what you're known by as a man was by who your father was. But Deborah would be known by what family her husband was from. So they introduce her and then they basically give her a high social status by linking her to somebody as opposed to letting her sit on her own, because as a patriarchal society, a male-dominated society, her status as woman alone would have left her as insignificant to the reader. By attaching her to her husband shows that she had some sort of significance. So it's kind of it's just a little drop in the story to let you know that she wasn't just, a nobody, that she actually had clout and that her judgments that she was proclaiming and her, I almost said profiting, but that sounds like she's making money.
Oh, yeah.
Her oracles had the weight of something behind them. So now Deborah, her job, a prophetess, the wife of her status, and then what she was doing was judging Israel. So verse four is this long, elaborate thing to give her recognition and to legitimize her to an ancient Near Eastern audience.
We don't know much about her husband, just that she has one, right? So he is mentioned, I think, just once in general, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And now, did you get much about judging Israel at the time? What would that entail? Did you get much on that?
No, the biggest thing is that there were some scholars divide up the judges into, or the leaders in general, into two different types. They're basically like the judges that were like oracle based. Once again, they were like, or I can't remember the word. I should have made the note. And then there were the saving kind that would go into battle. And Deborah for many years was thought to just be like the saving type, or not the same type, the oracle type.
Mm-hmm.
But there is proof that she went with Barack into battle later. So she kind of hits the swath of both. But yeah, I didn't get a whole lot of extra, just that she is one of the rare that bridges both gaps.
Okay.
Of leader. So like Samuel wasn't necessarily a judge that was going into battle, despite some of his bloody, gory stuff that happens with Samuel.
Right.
He was more of the prophet who was just the oracle.
Okay.
Where Deborah would be more in that vein. But as we get in here, she will do some battling.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
What did she swing a sword? We're not told.
Yeah.
But she definitely goes and accompanies.
Okay.
Right. Try not to do spoilers, but yeah, do you have anything? Right.
I didn't. That's why I asked the question. I was curious because I actually did not find a lot about her role as judge. So she was judging Israel. That's great and all. But do we have more details or anything along those lines? And this is where scripture is important and powerful, but a lot of times this is where commentaries I think can be very helpful, is going back to some of the historical stuff that isn't necessarily laid out in scripture all the time. But at the same time, some of that historical thing that actually isn't laid out in scripture actually kind of helps us realize and see how many of these, how really scripture is more real and historically proven and can connect with aspects within history. So it actually helps, I think, to give more credit an authenticity to what is talked about in scripture when we look back at some of the historical to fill in some of those pieces and go, oh, whoa, these places, these people, these et cetera were real, and it does fit within there. And so we can have some extra knowledge of kind of what goes on there. So
yeah, we're still in a, I don't want to say we're like prehistorical, but we're still at a point in time where documentation is harder. Mm-hmm. What we know about the surrounding areas is harder to piece together. We don't really get into more historically verifiable things until we get around the Book of Kings. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's when we start seeing other literate nations starting to write things down and to corroborate between stuff.
Right.
Judges, we're still very tribal, mm-hmm. With Israel and everybody around them. And having things written down is actually still kind of rare. Sumerian texts started around 6,000 BC. So you would think in a couple thousand years we would have had some stuff going here, but we're still a little, you know, we're still trying to decipher hieroglyphics at this time to figure out what happened.
Right.
You know, and
right.
we still don't know.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. But there's definitely some insight to be made.
Yeah.
With the historical context that we do have. Mm-hmm. So 6 through 10?
Yeah, sounds good.
Chapter 4, 6 through 10 of Judges. She sent and summoned Barak, the son of Abinoam, from Kadesh Naphtali, and said to him, Has not the Lord, the God of Israel, commanded you, go gather your men at Mount Tabor, taking 10,000 from the people of Naphtali and people of Zebulun. And I will draw out Sisera, the general of Jabin's army, you said Habad's army, to meet
well,
you.
Well, it'd be Hebrew, the J is pronounced with a Y.
Okay.
So it'd be like Yabin or Yabin.
Okay, Yabin.
But you can say Jabin. No one's going to get mad.
Okay. And I will draw out Sisera, the general of Yabin, or Jabin's army, to meet you by the river Kishon, with his chariots and his troops, and I will give him...
It would be the Wadi, not the river. Hand. Sorry. Huh? Hebrew river's Wadi.
Of Kishon?
Is it the river? Oh, it's my spot.
River Kishon.
Being a jerk, yeah.
Didn't we see Wadi. That in Ezekiel?
Yeah. Yes, we did. I'm pretty sure we did.
I think the beginning of it, yeah.
The Wadi Kishon.
Barak said to her, if you will go with me, I will go. But if you will not go with me, I will not go. And she said, I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the road on which you are going will not lead to your glory, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hand of women. Then Deborah... Or to the hand of a woman. Then Deborah arose and went with Barak to Kadesh. And Barak called out Zebulun and Naphtali to Kadesh. And 10,000 men went up at his heels, and Deborah went up with him.
There is so much in here.
What you got? Start us off.
You want me to start?
Yep, go for it.
Okay. We can infer that Barak was already told prior to Deborah telling him. Now, whether Deborah delivered that message or not, but right. prior to this account, that he was told to go do this. With the words, has not the Lord, the God of Israel, commanded you, go gather your men? And he didn't. So for some reason, Barak did not have faith. But what we see now, immediately people are like, oh man, we got a Jonah. Let's crucify mm-hmm. him. You know, like let's throw him to a fish. What really we see here, though, is almost a mirror of the story of Moses and Aaron.
That's what I was just looking at, because okay. I was like, I just got that. I read that through in one of the commentaries I was looking at yeah. is we quickly crucify him, but at the same time, like, he might not quite be as bad as we, like, originally want to put into there.
Yeah, I actually had some commentaries that kind of gave a different view of Barak here. The one that I used that corrupted my file, that one, he is pro Barak. And the other one that I use that has never corrupted my file is a little more anti.
Okay.
I feel that I'm a little more pro because of some of the stuff that I've been saying here. Like, he doesn't have the faith in his abilities here. And he doesn't believe that he's strong enough, mighty enough, heroic enough to do the job that God wants him to do. Mm-hmm. So he, like Moses, says, well, hey, look, I need a mouthpiece to go with me. I need somebody that has weight to come with me to help me recruit these 10,000 people. Deborah, would you come with me then to make this thing happen? And Deborah's like, sure, but let it be known that, like, you're not going to get the glory for this. And that's where people start to get crazy. Like, oh, he was outside of his divine normative and so on and so forth. And yes, he was. He goes outside the divine normative, but not because he's not willing to get the glory, but because he had heard the command and decided not to do it initially. So there was an initial fear or disobedience that happened that later is mended by him leaning into Deborah and saying, hey, I need someone like you to come with me or else I can't do it. Mm-hmm. Just like Moses was like, but Lord, I can't speak well. And God's like, well, here's Aaron, your mouthpiece. I feel that there was actually a sense of humility from Barak here by saying, I can't do this. I need somebody who is holier than me, somebody that hears from God on the regular to come with me. I think it's wrong to say this story is proof that the man is not doing what his complementarian role was designed to do. That's definitely an element of it, but I don't believe that's the focus of it. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing is you don't actually see any judgment or any...
And spoiler, they're going to write a song together.
Right.
And it's a good one. It's right. A hit.
So it's not like there was a judgment brought against him.
Right.
It's not like he was like they then suffered God's wrath, or it's that God decided not to go ahead and now work because he's like, well, I'm hesitating. So you don't actually see an angry, you don't see God getting angry. Now, it's one of those that if you're thinking as a war, you know, you're not going to be the war hero, but he actually doesn't seem like he's got a problem with that. Like,
right.
He's like, all right, fine. I'm cool with that. Like, are you coming with me? So,
and once again, the spoilers, we'll see in the end, the glory goes to God regardless. Mm-hmm. And in that way, we could say Barak was in the right frame of mind. Like, well, you know what? This glory doesn't matter to me anyway.
Yeah. Well, cause you're going to see throughout the same time, like in I don't know if I want to spoil too much. The hand of this person, the hand of this person, the hand of a woman, the hand of... Mm-hmm. And the thing is the one thing that's not mentioned is the hand of God, but that is actually fully not implied, but seen throughout the entire text.
Yeah,
you know, like
the last couple of verses in here will spell it out too.
So it's not like... I mean, you see lots of people's hands, but the real hand that matters is the hand of God throughout the story. So it's not like he's even going in there for the praise and battle. And, you know, we look at this and might go, ooh, the hand of a woman. Oh. That means Deborah's going to get credit. But actually, really, that's part of the story that I'm not going to give away yet either.
Yeah, I'm going to read something here. So give me just a second and I'll try not to make dead space because it might take me a second to look it up. Let me see. If I had a search, this would be easy.
So we'll, I guess while he's doing that, maybe I'll give like a little bit of preface to 4:11. So when we go on to the next section, 4:11, we're going to kind of go backwards a little bit. It's kind of like if you're watching a movie and it says 1 week earlier, you know,
I got it.
Cool.
Hebrews 11:32. And what shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, and Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouth of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, and were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, and put foreign armies to flight. Hmm. Barak is mentioned in the Hebrews Hall of Faith. So before we go back in time, and I'm going to make all your pastors mad at me. If you're sitting under a pastor that uses this message to talk about how a man didn't do his duty and he was shamed by a woman, read him Hebrews 11 and ask him where his name is. Because that's, I don't think that's the point of the story at all. And I think that it's patriarchal and misogynistic to say otherwise. Agreed. And I will die on that hill.
Yeah, I would jump on that same hill.
So there's 10 less listeners now. All right.
Well,
and calling the herd.
and the thing is with that though also is like, it still took a lot of faith to do that anyway. So it's not like you're talking about a faithless man. That's
he didn't
like,
have faith in himself.
Yeah.
He had faith in God so much so that he said, well, she's holy. If she comes with me, I'll believe it.
Right. We can't discredit. Who here that listens, has not at some point had a lack of faith in what, in what God was doing. None of us have any business being able to point any tent pegs at these guys. Cause they've been down that.
Nice.
Thank you. Like that. Really, we've all been down that road. So like we have no ability to be able to judge them.
Well, we look at on this rock, Peter, I will build my church. But what did he use a lot of times to build that church? I mean, there are a lot of women mentioned.
Oh yeah.
That helped build that church that were part of that construction. So I don't know. I think I grew up a little bit and also have like heard a lot of people using this as a man shirking his duty story as opposed to a man not being sure of himself but being sure of God.
Right.
And then not caring about the glory but caring about the outcome.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yep. That's yeah. We can go back in time now. I'll get off my soapbox and dodge the tent pegs.
All right. So back in time. 4:11 seems almost out of place. You see this a lot in Hebrew literature, but actually you see this a lot in current day movies, where in order to get the full impact of the story, you almost have to be able to go back in time and know, well, what's happening behind the scenes. So right now we're getting an upfront, impersonal picture of the narrative that's being painted, but it's one of those that, oh, they're like, oh, wait, okay, I got to fill you with this part before you can understand it. So you watch a movie and it's like 1 week earlier, 2 months earlier, 3 hours earlier, and you're getting all these extra little pieces of the movie that are not part of the main narrative being told at the time, but are incredibly important to understanding the full story and the impact of what's happening in the movie. So 4:11 kind of does exactly that. It kind of backtracks a little bit, just to kind of give you some background knowledge so that you can kind of fully understand what's going to be happening in the upcoming parts. So in 4:11, we get, now Heber the Kenite had separated from the Kenites, the descendants of Hobab, the father-in-law of Moses, and had pitched his tent as far away as the oak in Zananiam, which is near Kadesh.
Traitor.
Yes. So
yeah, the separated here is a cut, separation with a sword is essentially what that separated comes from. So it's a clean separation of taking one thing and making it two independent things. Yep. So yeah.
And from what I had read, there is, depending on the commentary read, there is mixed, not feelings, but mixed alliance. That's even the wrong word. So there's this thing where he actually had ties with both God's people.
Israel and Sisera.
But also...
or Syria or whatever.
Yeah, so... but if they were to choose a side, they would probably lean more towards the Israelites than the other. So when you have the upcoming part of the story, you're going to see where those mixed alliances might potentially mix up some preconceived intentions of what direction it might go in the crossroads of having to make a decision. Hmm. So, all right.
Traitor. Oh, sorry.
12 through 16?
Yeah. I don't have a whole lot for this part, so.
All right. When Sisera was told that Barak, the son of Abinoam, had gone up to the Mount Tabor, Sisera called out all his chariots, 900 chariots of iron, and all the men who were with him from Haroseheth, Hagoyim, to the river Kishon. And Deborah said to Barak, "Up, for this is the day in which the Lord has given Sisera into your hand. Does not the Lord go out before you?" So Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him. And the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and all his army before Barak by the edge of the sword. And Sisera got down from his chariot and fled away on foot. And Barak pursued the chariots and the army to Haroseheth Hayogaim, and all of the army of Sisera fell by the edge of the sword. Not a man was left. And I can't read tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a high speed chase. Well, not a high speed chase.
It's got a low chase. Speed. Yeah.
So what do you have? What you got?
I think I'm ahead of the turn still. So yeah, not a whole lot in here. Just we see the battle that actually takes place, and kind of a turning of the tables. You would think that the chariots would come down hard. The biggest thing here is that Sisera, whatever his name is, gets away. And by gets away, he basically like sees that his army's not doing well and runs away like a little coward.
Mm-hmm.
Almost said another word. but that's kind of the biggest point outside of the victory, the utter devastating rout that has happened here.
Mm-hmm. I love how Deborah kind of wakes up in the morning. She seems pretty pumped.
Yeah, she's like, let's do it.
And I kind of see why Barak is all about having her come with, like, because if you're not motivated, like, you're motivated. Like,
right.
I feel like, you know, I'd be, you know, Barak, or at least if I'm putting myself in that situation, like, man, I'm still chilling in bed. And she's like, up, for this is the day in which the Lord has given Sisera into your hand. Like, she is pumped about. Yeah, come on. And I need my second cup of coffee.
Yeah.
So like, and then she's like, does not the Lord go out before you? So like, she is pumped about the battle that's about ready to set forth. She is getting ready to fight. She is getting herself, Barak, her troops motivated. And she's like, we're not going to lose. And why aren't we going to lose? Well, man, we got God. Like, does not the Lord go out before you? So it's really a great opportunity to see this army come together to get ready. And we're going to find out where it's not like an empty hype within this battle. Like, we see where they just destroy them, and you know, the dude,
we translate the word a rout, like, I mean, that's like complete and utter whooping.
Yeah
Oh, and really quick, the reason I called Heber whatever his name is, the Kenite coward, is because it's implied that he's the one who told Sisera that in verse 12 that Barak, the son of Abdominals, had gone to Mount Tabor.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, even with a snitch helping him out, God was still like, yeah, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This Kenite man can't thwart my plan here.
Yeah.
So,
and we get him that's kind of what Sisera jumps up, gets out and
runs. Bam, like a coward.
Yeah. He gets his punk butt.
We just call him the coward Sisera.
All right, like, the coward Sisera.
Straight up coward.
And he gets up, man, he just starts booking it. See you later, people. And so that's where we leave off. Again, I don't think I got anything else.
No, not in that part. This is leading up to the climax of the chapter.
Okay. So 17 through...
you do 22? 22,
yeah. Yeah. All right. But Sisera fled. Sorry.
Coward.
But coward. There you go. We need the coward.
Yeah, I'll do the sound effects.
All right. But Sisera fled away.
Coward.
On the foot to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber. The
traitor's wife.
I like that. For there was peace between Jabin, the king of Hazor, and the house
traitor.
Of Heber, the Kenite.
Traitor.
And Jael came out to meet Sisera
the coward.
And said to him,
up
turn
top.
Aside. Turn aside, my lord, turn aside to me, do not be afraid. So he turned aside to her into the tent, and she covered him with a rug. And he said to her, please give me a little water to drink, for I am thirsty. So she opened a skin of milk and gave him a drink and covered him. And he said to her, stand at the opening of the tent, and if any man comes and asks you, is anyone here, say no. But Jael, the wife of Heber, took a tent peg and took a hammer in her hand. Then she went softly to him and drew... Sorry, the language made me laugh. Then she went softly to him and drove the peg into his temple until it went down into the ground while he was lying fast asleep from weariness. So he died, and behold, as Barak
you
was...
You don't say!
And then that's such like, it's just, so he died. We're just like, okay. And behold, as Barak was pursuing Sisera, Jael went out to meet him and said to him, come, and I will show you the man whom you are seeking. So he went into her tent, and there lay Sisera dead with the tent peg in his temple.
Beautiful. What a beautiful picture.
Yeah. So what do you have?
So depending on the commentator,
okay.
There's some speculation. One that they agreed on is that Sisera should have never went to the women's tent. She did come out, but the term is a military term, and Jael came out to meet him. That would be similar to generals coming out to discuss the terms of war or the terms of surrender or whatever happened to be. So it's very much a military picture here. And she says, turn aside to me, do not be afraid. So he turned aside to her into the tent. Some commentators say that there could be a expectation of her like sexually towards him, that he would have that expectation of her. And he immediately becomes rude and starts ordering her around. So he's basically immediately trying to take dominion over property that's not his. And yes, they looked at women as property there. Outside of the fact that she originally came out to him as an equal, he immediately treats her as a spoil of war, essentially, and possibly hoping to take that spoil for himself. Once again, it was improper for him to go into her tent at all. He should have never been there. That's not his place to go. Even if she invited him, he should not have gone.
Interesting.
There's a little bit of that kind of surrounding it. But once again, as we go on, we'll find that's not the biggest part of the story.
Yeah. And one of the commentators I talked about was he might have felt that this was a place of safety because the Kenites did have friendly relationships with Jabin at the time. So like there could be, this is a trustworthy place to go.
Right.
And that's why he ended up seeking refuge there. However, we also learned earlier that there were some ties with Moses and being Moses' father-in-law. So there's that aspect of, okay, you could have a relationship with either one of them. But what's going to happen? We don't know until we know. I think I love the language of the text, he went, and again, I don't know how this translates into the Hebrew, but at least from the English part of it, then she went softly to him and then drove a peg into his temple.
Such a raw juxtaposition of opposites, right?
Until it went down into the ground while he was lying fast asleep from weariness. And then so he died. It's like, okay. So unclimaxful, is that a word?
It's kind of a quick letdown. It's like build, tension. Yeah. And he died.
And you're expecting blood and stud, brains like all over the place. And if you graphically think that through your head, but so he died.
Yeah.
Okay. That's so chill.
And then, that's so matter of fact. And then he went in and saw him with a tent peg in his head.
Right.
Okay.
That's normal.
Some of the other, Ian Duigood, who I used his commentary a lot for Ezekiel, he points out a couple of things that might further show that she was upset with him. Once again, he went into her tent, kind of uninvited. Mm-hmm. She said, turn aside to me. Don't be afraid. And he was like, well, I'll be coming in here and make my home.
Yeah.
And then he says, please give me a little water. And she gives him milk. He says that either A, that could have been her having a quiet rebellion. I ain't giving you what you want. But I also don't want you to be suspicious. Or B, it could also be because she knew it would make him fall asleep faster. So that's also something. And then once she gives him that, he goes and says, go keep guard for me, little house elf, and do what I say. You know, like, once again, kind of like throwing his authority around a little bit. And she just wasn't having it. Mm-hmm. One verse later, tent peg.
Yep.
I thought what was really cool is whatever his name is, Ian. Great British,
Ian.
British sounding fellow, probably Scottish because I'm wrong. Anyway, he points out how this is another bit of foreshadowing of Genesis 3:15, talking about how the offspring of the woman will crush the head of the serpent.
Interesting.
And it's another literal head crushing.
Okay.
There's a battle. There's an enemy, and the enemy's head is crushed. Through the, you know, Israeli people, God's chosen people, through the line of Moses. So we see that once again kind of playing out here. And I didn't write it down. I think I did the first time. But there's a couple other examples of women crushing the heads of enemies throughout the Old Testament. And this is another potential foreshadowing of God using the lineage of his people. I don't want to say of Christ, because I'd have to read through and see if she shows up there, but using the lineage of his people to crush the head of the serpent that would try and destroy God's people. So another cool kind of deeper layer there.
She's definitely more of a bad A than I am.
Oh yeah.
Because like, I mean, what she took a peg and took a hammer in her hand, then she drove the peg into his temple. I'm like, man, I would have been puking. Or I would have hit it hard enough to like make a little scratch on his head before I punked out and ran.
I do wonder, because like whenever I drive a nail, like you kind of hold it against and then you hit it. Like you got to hold it firmly to the surface. We see that tire. She's like, oh, I'm just giving you a head massage. You know, like how did that?
And she would have had to hit hard, because she would have just had to take him out right away. Like you would have thought. I mean,
that first blow is important.
Yeah, because you would have thought that, like, military, like, remember that military guy that we used to know, Andy, he became the pastor of that one church for a while. I don't want to say his last name because I don't know if we're allowed to do that. But
wait, hold on, I can mute you. One second. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Former. Okay, that. Yeah.
And he was former, a breacher. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a former military.
Kicked
and like,
down doors and stuff.
We were trying to do a prank on him one time, and like, he whooped our butt
you
in the
told
middle
me
of the
about,
night.
That
oh,
was
were you
pretty,
not there?
Yeah, that was. Oh. You told me that you guys, and wasn't like, was it you or one of you at the end was just sitting there like, I don't know what's going on?
Yeah.
Like,
well, I left. I ran. so like, we were in there trying to prank him. And like,
Wait, really, really quick. Okay, so this, he was a pastor. I think both of us might have been employed by him technically at one time or another. He wasn't just ex-military. He was a breacher. His military job was to go in and get people out. Like, they would breach a door and then go into a place. And he did tell a lot of stories of times when they would go in under fire and go into a hot spot and pull people out of like houses and stuff. So this dude definitely was well trained and had combat history kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, now tell him what you idiots did.
So we were at a youth retreat. And
I say that because it was like a year before I came on board.
Yeah. We were at a youth retreat and like we were... he was, you know, asleep, and we're like, oh, let's go like toilet paper, or, you know, whatever into his bed. I don't remember what we were trying to do. And we went in there, and like a bunch of us went in, and, you know, we're sneaking while he's asleep. And he ended up, I don't know, one of the other guys that was there, like he woke up, he ended up, I guess he went into like attack mode or what PTSD, yeah. I don't know what you do. And he grabbed the kid.
Instinctual.
Like raised him up, slammed him against the bunk. We got out of there quick.
From what I remember hearing the story, mm-hmm. whoever was over him, he literally like put his hand up, like ox jawed him.
Yeah.
And held him to the top of the, like he was on the bottom bunk and was holding him up against the top of the bunk while like fighting off the rest of you guys
with the
other hand.
We got out of there. Like, I mean, we weren't going to wait to see what happened.
But I've also heard that he never mentioned it.
No, I don't even know if he realized he did it. So like,
that's awesome.
That's the crazy.
I'm so glad I wasn't there because I'd be dead.
None of us were like, we were all afraid to bring it up the next morning. So like, if he actually knew what he did, we were all too scared to say anything.
He was probably because, like, oh no, I hope nobody gets mad at me for what I did.
Well, because no one wanted to admit we were in there. The only person that we thought was fully busted was the one that he like beat up. So anyway, so again, I'm thinking of like, if you don't just pound it right away, he's a military dude. Like, yeah.
Who's seen battle?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, he just came out of battle, so he's probably still adrenaline.
Yeah.
And so again, you would have had to make that first strike count. But yeah,
definitely would have had to make sure you get through the skull and that one. Now, here's the thing. She's probably been driving intense stakes every day, you know, so maybe she's a little, you know. She's a little bit more rough around the edges than, you know, Cicero or whatever his name is. Yeah, I don't know.
But pounding that thing into a ground versus someone dude's temple, like, man, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else there?
No, we can wrap up this part of it.
And 22 through 24, or 23, 24, yep. So on that day, God subdued Jabin, the king of Canaan, before the people of Israel. And the hand of the people of Israel pressed harder and harder against Jabin, the king of Canaan, until they destroyed Jabin, king of Canaan.
We wrap it up with the true hero who gets the glory.
Yep.
On that day, God subdued Jabin, the king of Canaan. Not Jael. Not Barak, not Deborah.
Not even the hand of a woman.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the prophecy technically came true.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think if I remember correctly, they do mention it in 5. So I think in the song,
yeah,
they talk about the idea of the hand of a woman. So we actually see, actually, technically kind of 2 women, because Deborah was a part of that. Mm-hmm. But then you have...
I would argue that JL, I feel like I'm still pronouncing her name. I got to get that book.
Probably.
Oh, wait, it's a J, so it'd be like Yael, like Yael.
I wonder how they do it in like the different Bibles.
I should have
read
named
out loud.
Daughter that. That would have been awesome.
Oh, that is true.
Nobody would ever want to sleep next to her or anything?
No.
Like, I don't want to share a room with Abby. She'll stab me with a tent peg.
Well, especially with so many boys. Like, she's got to like...
She'd tent peg
She's got to be able to hold her own, yeah. Actually, I could totally sleep her, like... But anyway. Yeah.
But yeah, that's definitely something that... Yeah.
Yep. So anyway, but then on the day God subdued Jabin, the king of Canaan. So again, we see the credit gets put where credit is due. Mm-hmm. Once again, in God's hand. Yes, you see multiple times where it mentions the hand of a woman, the hand of Jael, the hands of the Israelites, whatever. But the real hand that actually matters is the hand of the Lord. Mm-hmm. And so we see once again where God comes to the rescue, really in the most unexpected way. Like, because even when you're beginning in the story, ooh, okay, Deborah's going to go help Barak and it's going to be delivered to the hand of the woman. You're like, ooh, I bet you that's Deborah. Or
right. Yeah,
not.
She's talking about how she's going to get that victory for herself.
Yeah. And no, that's not what's going on. Once again, God coming through in a rescue that shows that it has to be God, because really, how else? Like really? But God works throughout history in that way. And we see that actually through Jesus as well, where people are not going to expect God's ultimate rescue plan to be done through a humble baby who decides to choose to go and die on a cross. I mean, really, who does that except for the one that really deserves the name God? Yeah. So that's all I got.
All right. I'm trying to fade music in.
Okay.
So thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.